you guys. I am here with another episode of the Just M segment of the Mom Struggling Well podcast. We have been walking through John a little bit slowly here and there. Today we're in John 13 through 17, just a couple verses. Yeah, I was just going to tell you though, as we start coming in, I was trying to figure out a way to like comb my hair down and I could not find what I needed. And I realized it's because my five-year-old boy has taken an extreme interest in his hair lately. I found hair on the ground, like he's cutting his own hair, and not like when a three-year-old cuts their hair. He's like literally legit trying to style it. I asked him because he doesn't know how to throw it away because they don't know how to put anything away. I asked him, like, are you going to barber school? Are you taking night classes I'm not aware of? Because let's not do that. But he is, and of course, as a five-year-old, he's terrible at it. And the things he's doing to his cute little head of hair are horrible. But he's very passionate about his hair right now. So he's taking my hair products. Not my daughter. My daughter don't care. If you don't like her hair, she'll just punch you in the face and move on with her day. But my son, very fancy. So anyway, this should be interesting. All right. So today we're going to read, like I said, John 2, 13 through 17. It's about when Jesus cleansed the temple. And I got to say, at first, I'm like, okay, well, how is this going to apply to me? And what am I going to learn? But I learned a lot. So let's go ahead and read it. Verse 13 of John 2. The Passover of the Jews was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple, he found those who were selling oxen and sheep and pigeons and the money changers sitting there. And making a whip out of cords, he drove them all out of the temple with the sheep and the oxen. And he poured out the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. And he told those who sold the pigeons, take these things away. Don't make my father's house a house of trade. His disciples remembered that it was written, zeal for your house will consume me. So that's what we're going to cover today. Okay, so the first sentence, just verse 13 of John 2. The Passover of the Jews was at hand, and Jesus went to Jerusalem. So I want to know, I mean, we know Passover is a festival, happened every year, but who cares? Why is that a thing? Well, okay, so the Passover used to be in the homes of the people when they were slaves in Egypt, but then it became like a pilgrimage festival, so everybody would go every year to Jerusalem. So it was a big deal. And so Jerusalem would end up swelling in size like six times. It wasn't just like a lazy Sunday afternoon at the temple. It was like bustling. Some historians say that there may have been like 200,000 additional people in Jerusalem than in a normal day. So when he just headed uphill to Jerusalem, think of it like Christmas Eve before there was online shopping, where you just like can barely even drive down the road because everybody's out. That's the stage that all of this is about to happen on, is incredibly busy Christmas Eve type bustling excitement as a festival. That's where the scene happens at. So that really kind of changes it, right? So then we see that in verses 14 through 17, he gets there, he gets to the temple, and he immediately saw the people selling stuff and started making a whip. That just feels abrupt. It feels like he goes on to like drive people out like they were animals. So he makes a whip. A couple things are interesting, I think, about this. He made it. He did not pull it out of his sleeve. Like if I were Jesus, I would not like fashion a whip with my hand, like an artisan crafted whip. But he did. So he does not just take the easy way out, like I sure would. Even easier than that, just make those jokers disappear. Like, you don't really have to even drive them out. You could just, like, make them not there anymore. He has done it before. It's a thing he can do. But, no, he fashioned a whip. The other thing that I would think, if you've just decided, I'm going to just make a whip right now, that doesn't just happen super quick. I'm not a whip maker, but I don't think that it does happen super quick. So he's not concerned with looking strange. I would not make a whip in the middle of a bustling area. I would just not do that. So he doesn't take the easy way out. Obviously, he doesn't take the easy way out. He died for us. And he also isn't concerned with appearances, which we will see again when he does what seems like super crazy and kind of freaks out a little bit on the people in the temple. So he makes a scene. So it says he found them in verse 14 15 made the whip, drove them out. Also, he didn't just drive the people out. He took their coins, the money changers' coins, because remember, people are coming from all over, so they need to have money changers to get everybody on the right currency. Poured out those coins, poured them out on the ground. Didn't just hand them the bag and say, go ahead and find a new place to do this. He poured it out, and then he turned their tables over. So it doesn't seem like the most tactful way to do it. I think it doesn't feel like the thing we would think Jesus would do. You know, like if we had a WWJD bracelet on, I mean, I can see someone going up to him and going, dude, like, what would Jesus do? And he's like, just exactly what I did. So it's just, I think, good to challenge what we think Jesus would do and what we think God would be pleased with, because apparently we can think outside of the box a little bit, because he sure did. So I want to talk about why, because we know Jesus never sins. So this seemingly reckless kind of situation, this was not sin, because we know Jesus doesn't sin. So how do we reconcile that? We know that there is like righteous anger and unrighteous anger. Most of us live over in unrighteous anger land because we're upset about things that affect us or are, yeah, just negative things to us, or it affects us in a way that is not positive, and so we don't like it. His anger had nothing to do with him being inconvenienced or anything like that. His anger, as we'll see, is for his temple, his people, really. And so it wasn't sin to do those things, because it was righteous anger. And I think that we love to say that what we're dealing with is righteous anger. Largely, it's not. I get mad about things that affect me negatively. I don't like noise and mess, and I don't like when people are late and all those things. If I get mad about those things, that's not righteous. So I wanted to talk about the fact that they're selling. They had a business. The money changers, that's a legitimate business. There's nothing wrong with that. They had to go and offer sacrifices. So someone had to sell the sacrifices. You know, someone had to sell the animals. And they had been traveling for so long that they were not going to bring the sacrifices with them, those animals. Everybody knew, and it was acceptable, and it was accepted that you're going to go there, you're going to change your money, and you're going to have to get a sacrifice. The problem was where they were doing it. There's the inner courts, and that's where the Jewish people could worship. But then there was the outer courts, and that's where everybody else could worship. And if you were not Jewish, if you were Gentile, which most all of us are, we would have had to go into the outer courts to worship. And that's where all of that hubbub was happening. It was kind of like Christmas Eve shopping in the outer courts. So it was loud, and it was bustling, and there was just lots of noise, and that was his problem, not that they were having business or making money or anything, but he was just mad because their convenience and their greed, things had crowded in that had no business being there. So that was why he was angry. Isaiah 56:7 says that the temple is to be a house of prayer for all people. So God was not interested in only the Jews having a place to worship him, but everybody. So let's pause here and think in these little bit of verses, what can we learn about God? Number one, God is passionate that nothing come between him and his people. So he's really passionate. However, and this is where I think it's hard for us to kind of extrapolate the two, he's not a people pleaser. So he's passionate for people, but he ain't afraid to do some super weird stuff for the people. And I think if it was me, which thankfully it wasn't, because I would mess it up, I would have gone up and been like, hey guys, like, I'm sure you don't know that, like, these people get worship when you're having your, your shop. So would you guys mind if you could, like, maybe next time, or maybe move it over like 5 feet or something? So sorry. And here's your bag. And, you know, whatever. He just like went in like gangbusters, not a people pleaser, but because he loves people, that's why he did it. Yeah. So he's passionate. He's not a people pleaser. And it seems like it was really angry. He seems angry. I think if I saw someone doing this in public, I would think there's something seriously off about you. You seem a little angry, but it really was motivated by love, not anger at all. So I think the other thing we can learn about God is that he really does prioritize clearing our path to him. Keeping that pathway clear is a big deal. For the first time that you're thinking, I don't know, maybe this God thing is real. Maybe I need to investigate this. He wants that path cleared. But also, if you are just, you've been walking with the Lord for a long time and you just forget to prioritize him or forget to, you know, engage with him, he wants that path clear for you too. You know, so think about like the cares of the world kind of growing in on either side. He wants that cleared. He's like a landscaper. And I think of my front yard. Someone needs to landscape that front yard. I really do have a path and the vines are kind of, it's kind of hard to get down that path. So that's what he wants clear. He wants a thoroughfare to us that's clear. And so I think that for those of us who struggle with rejection or kind of identity, like who are we really? Do we matter? When he talks about, you know, loving us, does he mean like the general us or does he mean me specifically? The good thing is he was passionate about them having a chance to worship him and a place to worship him. And he doesn't change. So that means that that applies to us as well. It applies to me. It also applies to you. He is passionate about us having a place and a time to worship him without any distractions. The good thing is also he's not afraid to look ridiculous to get to us. If you think about just the cross in general, on our pictures, he's got a little loincloth on, but he was naked. That's completely shameful. Not just naked and covering, naked and like sprawled out, right? So he does not mind looking ridiculous for us. His priority is making a way for us to get to him. I love that. Okay, so what? What does this have to do with me, Emily? I'm really glad that you asked. So I'm gonna ask some questions based on this that you can apply to your life. Number one, if you have oxen in your temple courts, get them out. Just kidding. But really, if you have just oxen where they shouldn't be, it's a good idea to get them out. But number two, I think that sometimes as followers of Christ, we are the ones who get help to clear up misconceptions. So think about like, sometimes we are Jesus in the story who helps people clear out the things that aren't true. We can tell our friends like, hey, that thing you're believing or that thing you're involved in, I don't think that that's the best for you. Or, you know what I mean? So like we help to kind of clear that path and show truth to our friends. But I think sometimes instead of being like Jesus in that story, we're more like the money changers and the people selling stuff. We say one thing, but then we do another thing. And instead of clearing the path, it kind of muddies the water and makes people go, well, hold it. Like you say you're a Christ follower, but then I saw you do this thing over here. And so I think it's important for us to go, which side of the story are we on? And just a very practical, and it's kind of like nothing, but it's kind of bugging me. So I just thought I would share this. We went to the movies the other day. We never go to the movies because it's so expensive, but I found a gift card in my wallet to the movies. So we went to the movies. And I went first to the dollar store and I got a bunch of candy that my kids wanted at the dollar store so that I didn't have to buy it at the movie theater. When we were getting out, I put all the candy in my giant bag. And my son, the one who's into his hair, he's like, well, hold it, Mom. If we're not supposed to bring on outside food, then why are you doing it? You know, and I can go, well, because they want $5 for the very same box, and I want you to be able to go to college. We can justify it, but honestly, if I don't think I probably should bring in outside food, but I still think I'm gonna. So I think it's just a hard, we just have to watch how we're living because they're watching, and some of them have a lot of really good questions. So I did tell him, okay, you're right, then let's go ahead and not bring it at all. And he decided that maybe sneaking candy in is an okay idea. So I'm leading him astray. I don't really know what to do about that. I'd love to hear your your suggestions. Anyway, so that we just have to not muddy the water. Another thing, God's priority is clearing our path to him. If you imagine your heart as this temple court, what would be the money changers and the, you know, shop people in your life? Like, what would Jesus be coming after to clear out of your court? That's a hard question, but I think it's really good just to realize, like, he's passionate about clearing that place. So what is it that we're like, no, it's okay. For convenience sake, I want this thing here. Or financially, I want this thing here. Or it just brings me a lot of comfort. So what needs to be driven out of your court? And then also, most of us are moms. So we got kids who are inviting all kinds of stuff into their courts, as we all do, right? So what, though, do we see that's creeping into our kids' lives that we don't love, but we also are kind of too afraid of rocking the boat to drive it out? So I think as parents, we have to be willing to do and say the really hard things that are not going to be popular for the good of our kids, right? So that their hearts can have a place and peace with God, that they can worship him. What do you need to say no to, even if you don't feel like it? It's to drive it out of your kids, kind of their proverbial courts. So that is everything that I had. I was really excited about all that God taught me out of this little passage. So next week around this time, we'll do it again. We'll finish up John 2. But first, let me pray for us. Lord, I love your passion for us. You are not just the flannel graph Jesus who stands with his arms open and doesn't do anything. I think sometimes we just see you as like this passive little guy who always gets beat up and running away from everybody, but you are strong and powerful and passionate and not afraid of making enemies even a little bit, because your focus is us and our good. So I pray that you would help us to see that you are good and your intentions are good. And I pray that we would trust that more. God, if you've brought something to anybody's heart of that they just really need to let you drive it out, or anything that they need to step up and kind of get out of their kids' lives since they are kind of stewarding their little souls, I pray that you'd help us to believe that you're good enough and worth it to drive those things out. God, we thank you that you are so good to us. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, well, as usual, I gotta go get my kids from school. I always push this to the very last minute, but I hope you guys have a good rest of your day.